Coming up on today's show, Nintendo's theme park got an opening date, Immortals Fenyx Rising reviews are out, and we're taking your questions. Everybody, and welcome to another episode of What's Good Games Live, your source for video game news, commentary, analysis, and funny stuff right here at twitch.tv/whatsgoodgames. I'm Andrea Renee, joined by Miss Brittany Grombacher.
Hello, Andrea.
Hello, Brittany. Welcome back from the holiday weekend. How was your turkey day?
Oh, man. Ate so much, girl. I ate so much. It was glorious. I forgot how much I just needed, like, a home-cooked turkey and some gravy.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, I love eating Thanksgiving, and even though it's quite a production and a lot of cleanup, I honestly don't mind. I don't mind doing all of the work, because it's only once a year. I mean, sometimes I'll go, you know, full bore on Christmas as well, but it was fun. I mean, we did have a lot of leftover turkey, because it was just the three of us, so we still technically have turkey in the fridge.
I am turkeyed out. I think I have like a 2 to 3 day limit after Thanksgiving, and then I'm done. I know some people get creative. They do like nachos with their turkey, which makes you kind of want to barf a little bit. But you do you.
Yeah. 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 That's not for me. No. We did make some deliveries. We brought some, like a plate of all the fixins and stuff down to John's brother. Aww. And over to a friend of mine. Made a couple deliveries. But yeah, I'm with you. The only thing that I hang on to are like desserts. Like, we still have some of the pumpkin bars that I made because I made those the day after Thanksgiving.
Oh.
They're delicious.
I bought a fondue fountain.
What?
I did.
A fondue fountain.
I did, but then I was too lazy to actually figure out how to make it work. So what I did is I just took all the little wafers and I melted them in a bowl and then I just dipped my strawberries and pineapple in it. And that was my dessert. I know.
Okay, that sounds amazing, but now I'm confused. Did you buy a fondue fountain?
A fountain.
For cheese or a fountain for chocolate?
Well, it can do cheese, chocolate, even ranch dressing, which I think is, again, kind of... But no, it's like a three-tier fucking fountain where it just like cascades down in a glorious waterfall of chocolate.
I love this for you. I love that you did this. What an inspired choice.
Thanks. I just actually have to use it now. That's the whole thing. I have to actually use it.
It sounds like a nightmare to clean, though.
I know. That's why I didn't want to use it. I was like, you know what? I was like, I got one bowl here to clean and that's it. I even bought little fondue pokers and everything, girl. I was like set to be fancy as fuck. But then I resorted to forks in a bowl.
You know, sometimes you just got to do the easy thing. Yeah. Once you are able to host again, because I know you and Jason host a lot of family gatherings at your guys' house, then you'll be set. You'll be ready to go. You'll be like, look at me, family. Look how fancy I am with my fondue fountain.
I know. I'll fucking fake out everyone. It's going to be
All right, everybody. Welcome to the show. Whether this is your first episode or your 210th episode, we're glad that you are joining us here for What's Good Games Live. If you missed the announcement in last week's show or the social media announcements we made this morning, this will be the final What's Good Games Live for 2020. We are going on an indefinite hiatus. We don't know when the show was coming back in 2021. So it's just been kind of a fun experiment that Britt and I have gone on during the pandemic. And thank you to everybody who's been joining us here on our channel and been popping in for the live show. Or, of course, listening on your favorite podcast app or watching at youtube.com/whatsgoodgames or at roosterteeth.com. Wherever you are watching the show, we appreciate all the support you guys gave us in 2020 during the pandemic and look forward to making more content and different content for you in 2021. But we do have some news to get to, Brittany. But before we do that, we also have a couple of quick announcements. In addition to this being the final WGG Live, we're going to be doing a fancy stream next week.
I'm so excited for this. So yeah, the Game Awards are next Thursday and they start at 4 p.m. Pacific. So we thought, well, since, you know, we can't all get together this year, what if we just stream the whole thing? So we're going to get all fancy. We're going to like wear dresses. We're going to do our hair and makeup all cute and shit. And we're just going to have a big old stream. We're going to talk. It's going to kick off at 3 p.m. on Thursday, the 10th. Is that the 10th? Wow. It's just crazy to me that we're almost already in December. anyway. And so we're just going to talk about our choices, the nominees. We're going to live react to all the awards. It'll just be a lot of fun. So you should definitely join us.
Yes, it's going to be awesome. Yeah. I have so many things with sequins in my closet that have been begging to be worn. So I'm going to figure out which sequin thing I'm going
to
wear.
I might just bust out the thing I wore to Dice earlier this year.
That's not a bad call. I also really love that outfit that I wore.
Yeah, it was
especially
cute.
Since I don't think there's going to be a Dice Awards, at least not in February.
Right.
I heard rumblings they might move the awards to later in the year, but there's also talk of them going online, like a digital version only. So, I mean, where else are we going to wear these sparkly outfits?
Yeah, for the Game Awards. Also, I want to clarify, chat, just in case you were confused, the main show, the Friday show, is not going anywhere. That show is...
Oh, yes.
Yeah. No, that show is sticking around till the end of time. It's just this little fun Monday show right now that we're putting on hiatus. Don't worry.
That is correct. Yes, no, the weekly podcast on Friday... I mean, we can't break our streak now, Britt.
No.
We have an uninterrupted streak for 3.5 years rolling right now.
Fucking A. Crazy. But yeah, don't worry. Don't worry, friends. We're good.
Yeah, exactly. And there'll even be shows over the holidays. We already have our schedule, our taping schedule done, mm-hmm. our What's Good Game Awards, and our most anticipated shows, as per usual in the holidays, are going to be coming to you. Because Friday... during Christmas time is actually Christmas and New Year's Day, which both land on a Friday this year.
Wouldn't that just be so amazing if we weren't in a pandemic? Like, how perfect does that line up? You know, parties.
It would be great for everybody.
Yeah.
Like, you know, everybody has the weekend, so you can, you know, get crunk, have a good time, and then you sleep it off. But nope.
No.
Doesn't mean you can't do that at home.
It's true. Hmm. Wise
there
words.
You go.
Wise words, baby girl.
You know, what is time in the pandemic anyway, Brittany?
It's true. It's true.
Don't forget, everybody, you can be part of the show by going to patreon.com/whatsgoodgames. You can also be part of the show for one last time here on Twitch. If you guys drop your questions in the chat for Dear WGG, or of course, you can go to whatsgoodgames.com/DearWGG. And don't forget, we still check that for the Friday show as well. Mm-hmm. All right, shall we get into the news, Britt?
Let's do it, friends.
All right, what's our first story?
It is all about Immortals Fenyx Rising. The review embargo is up and the reviews are pouring in. So right now it is currently on PC at a 76, PS5 it's at a 72, Switch is at a 72, and Xbox Series X is at an 82. So I have a few blurbs here from some outlets. So IGN gave it a 7 and says, Immortals Fenyx Rising gives us a gorgeous world to explore, filled with mythological beasts, deities, and powers to wield. Its combat is satisfying with plenty of choice and upgrades, while its central characters, comedic tone, and storytelling are a real highlight. Its Achilles heel, though, is that so much of the puzzle gameplay feels like going through the motions instead of clever challenges. Polygon says, Immortals makes an impression because it's not a massive game like Assassin's Creed Valhalla, even if it benefits from the many systems and ideas that Ubisoft open world games have refined over the years. Its sharpest ideas have just enough time to dig in before the game smacks you back down into an experience you could have anywhere else. Finally, Eurogamer says, moment to moment is fine then, but as much as I had fun, Immortals failed to cast a spell on me to live in my mind when I wasn't playing in a way that really separates the competent games from the truly good ones. Most games borrow and iterate, but Immortals doesn't get the balance right. There isn't much distinct to think about here, and already it remains in my head not as a grand undertaking, but as bits and pieces of stuff I quite enjoyed, a switch on a pressure plate resurfacing now and then. The memory is already fragments. So, Andrea, have you played any of this yet?
So I haven't played any of the final build. Everyone who watches our YouTube channel may remember I did a sponsored gameplay stream of Immortals a couple weeks back with my friend Greg Miller and the folks over at GameSpot, which was super fun. And I had a blast playing the demo that was out, but I haven't played the final build yet. It's in my plans to do it so we can talk about it for the Friday show. But from what I've played so far, I really enjoyed my time with it, but it seems like it's another giant RPG that I'm going to have to dump like 75 hours in.
Yeah. So I'm about 10 hours in, and I'm really enjoying my time with it. You know, it's interesting listening to everyone kind of review it and talk about the game. It's almost as if they're reviewing it like Ubisoft came forward at one point and was like, we are trying to make Breath of the Wild, because everyone is comparing it to Breath of the Wild. And I can understand that to some extent. But if you look at what Ubisoft is doing, especially when it comes to this narrative storytelling and the Greek mythology and the banter between the gods, like, they're definitely trying to do something a little different as well. And I don't think it's a bad thing to compare the two, but I think when you try to hold it up to the standard of Breath of the Wild and compare what Ubisoft Quebec is capable of making a game, you know, kind of like this compared to what the Zelda team is capable of doing, it's just kind of an unfair comparison. But I think it's okay that this game isn't as in depth as Breath of the Wild is. And I think it does, like I said, something different and it feels more compact. It's definitely the kind of game when you're wandering around, you see something, you have like one objective, but you get sidetracked on the way there because you see a million different other things you want to do. And so far, like, I'm just having a chill time with it. But when I zoom out and I look at that huge map, like, oh boy, like, I don't know if I'm going to be able to finish this game, because if it's right now, it's still like kind of new and exciting. But if I look at all these different like quadrants of the map and knowing that I'm pretty much going to have to do the same thing here, here, and here, I think that's when I'm going to start to burn out. But so far, I think the narrative is fun. I think the banter between the gods is funny. I think it's fun that it's Greek mythology. And I think Phoenix is a pretty charming character. But, you know, it kind of seems like I'm on the minority on that one.
You know, it's interesting because I get at surface level why people are comparing this to Breath of the Wild, particularly from an art style perspective. But when I played it, it felt so much more like Assassin's Creed Odyssey, because obviously it's from the Assassin's Creed team, than it did Breath of the Wild for me. And I think a lot of that has to do not only with the Greek setting, but also just the way that the gameplay systems come together and the way that the RPG elements are combined with combat. I thought the combat was super fun in this game. I think the gear system in this game is way better than the gear system in Breath of the Wild. To me, that was one of Breath of the Wild's weakest points, was their gear system. Now, it's no secret that I wasn't a giant fan of Breath of the Wild from the perspective of people being like, oh my God, the exploration was so good, man. I love it. Like, for me, I was bored AF with the exploration in Breath of the Wild. I was like, there's nothing to do here. There's large, like, swaths of open area with the same, like, five enemies that I've been fighting. And then my weapons keep breaking, which makes me very angry. And so I think that what Immortals is doing that's very different is that there's a lot more personality, like, baked into narrative, baked into certain parts of the world. And like you said, it feels more compact, and I don't think that's a bad thing. And I don't think every open world RPG needs to have this wanderlust quality where you just explore for the sake of exploring. I think it's okay to have objective driven gameplay. I don't think either one of them is bad, but you don't need to always have both or one or the other.
Exactly. And I fear that we're at this point now where any game that resembles this is going to get compared to Breath of the Wild. And I think if there's anything we've learned, it's like the game industry loves them some Breath of the Wild. And I think every time you're going to lose when you make that comparison, and you're going to look at it from an unfair perspective. So I think if you look at what Ubisoft is doing and you have the proper expectations as to what kind of game this is, I think you're going to enjoy it for what it is and have a lot of fun with it. I sure as hell am. But if you go into it thinking like, oh, this is trying to be Breath of the Wild, oh, I didn't nail this correctly, oh, I didn't learn this about Breath of the Wild, then you're just not going to have a good time.
Yeah. Amen, Britt. Amen. Well, I guess people can check it out for themselves. I believe that demo is still available. That was on all platforms, actually, and it was free. So if you want to check it out. But the reviews seem, you know, pretty good overall. Yeah. So I'm excited to play some of it, but it's going to be hard because it's just one more giant game on the list.
I mean, good thing we don't have another huge game right around the corner. You know?
I don't know what you're talking about, Brittany. What could you possibly be talking about? We'll actually be talking about that probably in just a little bit. But let's move on, shall we, to our next story. Some exciting news that happened over the weekend. We finally have an opening release date for Japan's Super Nintendo World theme park, and it's actually a lot sooner than I thought it was going to be. So beginning February 4th, 2021, according to IGN, Universal Studios Japan will be open to the public. So some press got to head over there for a little sneak peek, and they got to check out Bowser's Castle, which is a reconstruction of the iconic location from the game. Visitors will be able to climb in a sweeping grand staircase, the top of which is an enormous, imposing Bowser statue. They also got to see Mario Kart's Koopa Challenge, which promises visitors a seat for a ride that includes augmented reality and projection mapping effects to bring courses from the Mario Kart games to life. This is realized through a special headset styled on Mario's hat with built-in AR screens. There's also a station where visitors were going to be able to... What does it say here?
Mario Kart Station is where the visitors will board the ride.
Oh, yes, the steering wheel and the AR headset for each rider. So that, to me... sounds like a freaking bad idea when we're in the midst of a global pandemic to have people wearing AR headsets. Does it not sound like a terrible idea to launch that part of the theme park
now? It really does. And it's funny because so many rides have used this before, you know, especially the little glasses. You think like, oh, that's kind of gross, but you think nothing of it. But now you're like, oh, no, keep it so far away from me. I don't even want to go near that shit.
No, thank you. I'm going to replay this trailer, Britt, if you want to keep reading the rest of this story.
Yeah, definitely. And in that link I sent with the photos, there's a photo of the AR headset looks like, which is pretty
silly. Me pull that up.
Okay, so yeah, like we were saying, Mario Kart Station is where the visitors will board the ride, and each cart has four seats with a steering wheel and AR headset for each rider. Warp pipes hang down from the ceiling of the deepest departure hall, while chunky metal chains and massive gears decorate the room. Speaking to the assembled media, Mario Kart Koopa's Challenge attraction executive producer Thomas Garrity showed off the new headset and power-up band. He noted that this will be the first ever Mario Kart theme park ride. Quote, guests will join their favorite characters immersed in augmented reality, steering their way through the Mushroom Kingdom, throwing shells at Koopalings as they race to the finish. He said that there will be win and lose states in the game, so victory is not guaranteed. He did say that the headsets will be sanitized after every use, along with other social distancing measures. And just as a reminder, this is located in Osaka, Japan. And as of right now, the Japan's borders are closed to foreign tourists, aka us. But apparently, like, they're going to fully reopen in spring 2021. And other locations are being considered at other Universal Studio parks around the world. Andrea, I need this in my life. I need this so bad. I'll never forget, in sixth grade, we had to make a project based off a fictional world we wanted to create. And my world was Nintendo World.
I'm with you, Britt. Girl. You and I would just ride all the rides. We would get off and go back and get in line again. Like, I'm down for this. I think this looks amazing. I think Japan is a great place to do a test market. I don't know why, if they're partnering with Universal, that it wouldn't go to other Universal locations throughout the world if it's successful. Because Mario is such a universal video game icon. Like, I think somebody a while ago had asked for a tweet like, who is the face of video games? And with a resounding, you know, applause for Mario, everybody was just tweeting Mario GIFs. Because obviously, you know, Super Mario Brothers are, I think, arguably the most iconic faces of video games, with Mario, of course, being number one.
Oh, yeah.
So I think it was, you know, just, I don't know. I'm nervous about this being a thing that they're going to attempt to do so early, because of how it's going. However, if you look at what Disney has done with their parks, now here in California, Disneyland has remained closed since March, which is so sad. But the rest of the parks have been very good about sanitizing and social distancing and really being strict about enforcement. And as far as I've been told, you know, looking at news media and publicity from Disney themselves, there hasn't been any outbreaks connected to any of the Disney parks.
Ooh.
So I think that's a good sign that they're taking all of the restrictions very seriously and you know, following all the protocols. However, we're also here in the United States in particular. The rest of the world seems to be mostly okay. There are a couple of hot spots, of course, in places like Europe and some other parts of the world. But a lot of countries are really implementing all of the tools that they should be, with contact tracing and mask mandates and, you know, all of that. And I just hope, I'm hopeful for 2021 that we can come back.
Oh, yeah. You know, if only we had a big change in leadership coming up, you know, maybe the future will look bright.
You know, if only that was happening. P.S. It's happening.
Oh, yes, it's happening. Bitches, get ready. But anyway.
It's a step in the right direction. Now we just got to get people to stop being stupid and selfish.
I mean, that's never going to happen, but that's okay. I mean, my faith in humanity has just kind of waned this year, but it's okay. Everyone listening to this and in chat, you're lovely and amazing, and I'm sure you're not stupid like these other folks. But.
Well, Brittany, if you want a quick boost in humanity, just a quick shout out and reminder that we had an amazing stream on Saturday for part of G4's Gravy-thon that won Rihanna Manuel, who I see in chat. What up, Ree? Organized, and we had some fantastic ladies join us for Among Us, and we raised over $2,500 for a group of amazing charities at gravython.com. So thank you so much to everybody who donated, who joined us on Saturday. So if you want to have a little bit of a restoration in humanity and the kindness
that's good.
Of humans,
that's thank all you for need. That a little dose. All of that.
Yeah.
Give it to me.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. All right. Moving on to our next news story. PS5 users are reportedly getting banned for selling their PlayStation Plus collection unlocks to PS4 owners, according to Video Games Chronicles. I saw this story and I was like, you dummies. So Sony has reportedly banned PS4 users who are paying money to access PS5's PS Plus collection via a loophole. The PlayStation Plus collection is a library of 20 PS4 games, including 10 first-party games and 10 third-party titles given exclusively to PS5 owners who are also members of the paid subscription service. However, some PS5 owners have begun exploiting a loophole with the collection, which sees them log into the user accounts of PS4 owners on their next-gen console, which causes the collection games to automatically unlock on the user's last-gen console. According to Sony's marketing, the PlayStation Plus collection is indeed intended to be a perk for owners of the PS5 consoles only. Unsurprisingly, auction sites including eBay already have multiple listings for people offering to unlock the PlayStation Plus collection in exchange for money. This is why we can't have nice things.
If there's a loophole, the kids will find it. The article also says that someone's made $100 already and they charge £5, and they charge £5 a pop to do this for you. It's like little entrepreneurs, like, listen, cool. Good for you for thinking outside the box, but like, what the fuck did you think was going to happen? Like, what? Anyway, so yeah, people, so this, it goes on to say, according to many users on a popular Chinese forum, Sony has issued multiple bans in the region for PS5 owners selling access to the PS Plus collection and those PS4 owners who have purchased access to it. According to the users, their bans will last for 2 months, while any PS5 consoles involved in the scheme have been permanently blocked from network services.
Oh, no.
You fools.
I mean, it's in the terms of service. You should maybe read it if you're worried about getting your console bricked because you violate the terms of service.
I don't know. I just saw this. I was like, well, of course it happened. There's a loophole. I'm kind of surprised Sony didn't think about this, though. Or maybe they knew it was going to happen and were like, you know what? We don't have the time right now to iron this out. Launch the bitch and we'll deal with it as it happens. And, well, here it is.
Yeah.
It's happening.
Yeah, it's frustrating. It's also, it's like, yo, PlayStation Plus is not that expensive. If you're going to pay someone $5, spend $5 more on your own and unlock it for yourself for a month.
Oh,
you can
even
buy like a 3-month sub for usually on sale for around that price. It's like, what? Why?
I don't know, man. I don't know. I don't get it. I really don't. People are going to people.
It's true. It's true. People it's true. Are going to people. Yeah. Indeed. Let's move on to our next story. Baldur's Gate 3, Brittany.
Oh, shit. What's this? I haven't seen this yet. All right.
What's interesting about this story is that you mentioned this back when you started playing in Early Access, and now I think it's coming to fruition, but people forgot that this was actually explained ahead of time. So here's the story. And the Baldur's Gate 3 developer says saved games won't be compatible with their next patch. So Baldur's Gate 3 launched back in early October, writes Polygon, only to be received but with open arms by consumers. Critics, on the other hand, were less enthusiastic about the early access release, which left the game in a clearly unfinished and incomplete state, which Brittany also mentioned on our show. Patch 3 is just around the corner, Larian announced on Steam, and with it comes the first change that affects the story. Unfortunately, this means Patch 3 will introduce the first save incompatibility, transitioning to the new version. In short, that means the many hours that players have put into the game will need to be thrown away before they can move on to the next version. There is one solution, however. Larian will be keeping the older version of the game alive as a secondary branch. Players can opt into this branch through the options menu, where it will be listed as a beta titled Patch 2. So you can play that branch as long as you like, bugs and all. You can already move to the beta branch now if you'd like to protect your save file and continue with the current version. Save files are not deleted from your computer. They'll remain in your folder, but you'll only be able to load saves specific to their respective versions.
Well, yeah. I mean, again, this was a thing that was, maybe it was like a little too embedded in their FAQ, but they also mentioned it a few times in the articles that like, yeah, like if you start this early access release, like we're going to make some drastic changes to the build over the course of the year, which is how long Larian has said they expect this to be in early access. And that means like shit's just not going to work anymore. And that's the risk you run. But Larian does need their beta testers, or the early access testers, rather, for, you know, feedback, because that's how they've kind of built a lot of their games, especially the Divinity Original Sin series. And I mean, this sucks, because the early access period, you can play at least up to 40 hours. Like, that's the average playtime, if you were to do it from start to finish, that Larian has said. And if you don't want to lose that progress, I get it, this sucks. But you should have known better.
Yeah, it's good that they were upfront about it, but I feel like it's not a common thing to wipe someone's like RPG progress in early access. Like that's common in multiplayer early access, things that have, you know, like a player versus player advantage. Like they'll sometimes wipe that stuff so when the retail launch comes out, everybody's on an even playing field. But for a single player game or even a co-op game that doesn't really have a PvP element, I don't get why they didn't build it into the infrastructure to allow you to be able to bring your save with you. That's kind of just a bummer.
Yeah, if I had to take a guess, because if you look at this quote, it's something that changes, that affects the story. It's because probably what people are experiencing in this early access, the story and narrative-wise might be very different in the final version. So they're like, this just doesn't make sense for this version of the game. I mean, like I said, this is a very, very early access state of game, and I think in a lot of ways it is broken, and I think they are looking for feedback not only from a bug perspective but from a narrative perspective and a character perspective. So I think they plan on doing a lot of overhauls, which is why it is going to be it's not going to work, which is a bummer, but I am so excited for this game. I was just thinking about this the other day. I was like, God, I want this game out right now. I could just really lose myself in like a deep RPG, story-driven, like, let's just go. And then I was thinking about Diablo and where the fuck that game is, because that also sounds great right now.
I was talking about this the other day, about how it was kind of a bummer that Diablo 4 wasn't on that most anticipated list for Game Awards, but Blizzard has been mum about what's going on with that game. And I guess they kind of learned their lesson, like, hey, maybe we shouldn't say anything about Diablo until we're ready to talk about Diablo 4 specifically. Obviously, we know it's in development. We know that it's coming out sometime. I wish they would have given us an update. Maybe, who knows? Maybe we're going to get a trailer at the Game Awards for Diablo 4. And then, you know, we'll be like, oh, snap, it's coming out summer 2021.
Whatever happened to the mobile version, that mobile game they were working on?
I don't know. Honestly, I wouldn't be surprised if they were like, so people didn't seem so excited about this.
Oh, man, I'll take it. I was excited about it. I mean, I know a lot of people weren't, but fuck, I would have played it.
Britt, you are in the silent majority. I think that there are millions of people around the world that would have been excited to play a Diablo mobile title, because there are hundreds of millions of mobile players, if not billions of mobile players around the world. And that's what Blizzard also understands. And I think the people that were very rude at BlizzCon and online about it represent a smaller portion of the audience than sometimes we remember.
I forget that's how the internet works.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It's usually the assholes who are the loudest. That sucks.
They're just out farting everywhere. That's what assholes do.
Mm-hmm. It's true. Uh-huh. It's true.
All right.
All right, we have a couple of quick like rundown news items that came out that we didn't want to go into the full story for. So Watch Dogs Legion's online mode, which you may remember was slated to launch before the end of the year, has now been delayed until 2021. Cuphead's DLC, The Last Delicious Course, finally has a release date. Psych! Just kidding. It's been delayed again, everybody.
Oh, man. I mean, get it. Take your time, but I want it.
Oh, my goodness. Like, honestly, just stop giving dates. Just stop. Just say, yo, this is hard, and we're just going to need as much time as we need. We'll update you when we have a release date.
Dates
That's
don't exist.
That's all I want them to say.
Dates don't exist in 2020 anyway. It's okay. Everyone gets it.
Oh, definitely. My goodness. There's a new patch that is out for Assassin's Creed Valhalla, if you were playing that. That is for PS5 and Xbox Series X, that allows you to choose a 60 frames per second frame rate.
Ooh.
So they will give you graphics options to prioritize resolution or frame rate, depending on your personal preference for your play experience. And then we got a release date for Doom Eternal coming to Switch. I completely forgot that this port was happening.
Yeah.
At first, when I read that story, I was like, wait, Doom for Switch get delayed? And then I was like, no, hold on. This is Doom Eternal. Hold on, this is Doom Eternal. I did send an email to the PR team asking them for a confirmation on the frame rate and resolution for the Switch version, and I never got a response.
Oh.
So I don't have one, but I assume it will be similar to what we got for the Doom version that was on Switch. But yeah, I guess if you own a Switch and you never got a chance to smash some demons,
there you go. There, you can play it on the Switch. You know, you can go from Animal Crossing to Doom in one fell swoop. It'll be perfect.
That is a hard pivot.
Yes. There was also another patch that came out a few days ago. I guess I don't know how long. But I thought I was going crazy because I was trying to charge my DualSense controller on my PS5. And let me clarify, this is a patch for the PlayStation 5. Nothing to do with Doom or Switch here. And I was trying to charge my DualSense, but it was never charging, and I couldn't freaking understand why. I thought I was doing something wrong, so I was taking my little portable charger and charging it that way. Come to find out, there was a controller issue for some folks. And when you're trying to charge your controller on the front-facing USB on the PS5 console, and it's now been fixed. I'm happy to hear that, because it was one of those things where I'm like, it's not charging. I don't know why. I'm not going to look into it. I'm just going to use my portable brick to charge this bitch. And I did. But now I know, Andrea, that I was not going crazy, that it was not a Brit problem. It was a PlayStation problem. So I just want to throw that out there, because there's probably someone out there who was having the same problems as me. And there you go.
I also did not understand that was an issue, because I've been using the little charging station that Sony sent over, and it's been very handy. But I am a big fan of charging stations. I had one for my PS4. I had one for my PS3. There's absolutely nothing wrong with just using a USB cable, but there's something just so convenient about just click, setting it down on top.
Sitting it there. See, here's the thing, though, is you're far more responsible than I am. And I feel like I would be, depending on where this charging station is, I would probably just like, meh.
It's right underneath my TV on top of our media center. So as convenient as it can be. So when I get up from the couch at 2 o'clock in the morning, I can just set that there when I turn the lights off. But yeah, I guess that it could potentially be in the way that you have your, you know, media stuff set up, that it could be, you know, just one more thing. But if you set it up next to your console, then it's the same amount of steps if you were going to plug your controller into the console anyway.
I know, you would think that, right? But I'm the person who even forgets to do that. So eventually, for the PS4, I had to buy like a 15-foot cable that would plug from the PS4 all the way to my recliner. Because
I have a 25-foot cable for that exact purpose.
Okay, yeah. Because I would forget, and I would go to play my game, and my controller's like dead. I'm like, ah, shit, forgot it again. That's okay. I got my long-ass cable. Now I'm good to go. Oh, well. Not a huge issue, just a Brit thing, you know?
Well, you know, there's nothing wrong with that.
No,
shall we move on to Dear WGG?
Let's do it.
There are some questions that came in. I dropped a couple in the doc, but don't forget, whatsgoodgames.com/DearWGG if you want to submit questions. You can also submit them in the chat if you are joining us live on Twitch. Let's see here.
Drop us some questions for our last show of WGG Live before hiatus. That's my that's my song. Mm. Thank you, Bunko, for giving us our little PlayStation provided by Sony disclaimer. I appreciate that.
I feel like we've said that enough times now that if you've missed that part, I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, Dark Tagger, you just got to put it away when you're done using it, like you do with all of your other things that your cat destroys. Okay, let's do this one because I like this question. Okay. And I think it's really sweet. So Nathaniel wrote in and said, with this being the last episode of the Live Monday show, are there any moments you and Britt have enjoyed the most? You've had lots of amazing people on the show, so I know that's probably impossible to answer, but thank you both for making my Mondays a lot more bearable. Much love. Oh, you're so welcome. Thank you for being part of the Monday show. So, Britt, any moments?
Oh, gosh. I mean, there's been a lot of fun times. I think about some of the guests we've had on. Obviously, they're superstars. We love having guests on. But I think what's been really fun about the Monday show is just more of a free ballin' chance to shoot the shit and interact with chat and deviate off course more so than I feel like we do during our typical Friday show. I think about some of the funny things we've done or like memories we've made. One of them was, remember that weird bet we made a long time ago, or that weird discussion we had, whether or not we wanted to swim naked through a pool of like jelly beans or like a pool of, what was it? Oh, Airheads. Do you remember that discussion we had at all? Maybe not.
I don't remember that at all.
Yeah, it was like, would you rather eat a bunch of rotten tomatoes or swim through a lake full of Airheads? Or it was something stupid like that. See, the fact that you don't remember it, it's fine. I have it clipped. I'll remind you. But it was just like dumb conversations like that that we've gotten to have on this show because I think it's just more like, again, free balling it. I think that's just been really fun.
Yeah, I think that that's the Monday show has always been like a weird like mixture of just random chatter that we usually don't indulge on the Friday show because the Friday show is long enough already, even though sometimes we do. But I think one of the things I love the most about the Monday show is our ability to be able to respond to breaking news. For example, the Microsoft and Bethesda story broke. Being able to do that and cover that news the day that it broke is so rare for us because obviously we record the show in advance of the Friday, published date. But being able to do this show and being more nimble has been super fun. And, being able to get a lot more guests on the show that can't do recordings for the Wednesday show because of timing or time zones or whatever reason, was also really fun. Having some of our friends on the show that are kind of unconventional guests, people like Tara Bruno from Tara Bruno PR, one of my personal BFFs, or having like Chelsea Blasco from Iron Galaxy, the co-CEO, people that I look up to and that I really admire in this industry that maybe wouldn't make sense to be on the show for the Friday show, for the whole show, mm-hmm. right? I think that was really fun as well.
Remember when Steve Saylor was on the show and we found out that Microsoft was shutting down Mixer? That was a fun, like, breaking news live
react. Oh, yes. That was, like, that broke live, during the show, didn't it?
It sure did. Yeah. Oh, that was fun.
Oh, boy. That was a day. And I think a lot of people were like, wait, is this real?
Yeah, we didn't believe it at first because someone in chat was telling us. We're like, whatever. And then we saw it. We're like, oh, shit. Is this actually happening? And it did. And that was a fun show to record.
Yeah, it really was. And I mean, just so you guys know, we don't know what the fate of the Monday show is. We're not canceling the Monday show, but we're just putting it on hiatus for a while because both Britt and I have some personal projects that we want to work on. And obviously we want to take some time during the holidays to just rest a little bit and not make content. And we hope that you guys, rest as well. And, hopefully we'll be able to bring this back and who knows what form it will look like. But it's been a fun experiment during pandemic for you and I to do this Twitch show and everybody that's subscribed to the channel and that's followed the channel, don't worry, the gameplay streams are gonna keep happening. They might also go on hiatus for December. I'm gonna let you guys know very soon about that, so you can adjust your subs accordingly. But I mean, it's been really exciting exploring the Twitch community and being part of the amazing movement that's happening on Twitch.
Yeah, and I mean, if we were in the middle of a pandemic, I don't think this buddy show would have been able to come to fruition, right? Because our schedules were just so crazy and so hectic. But yeah, we found ourselves, I think it was February that we kind of, this idea came to be that we're like, well, hey, we're home. We may as well give it a shot. And yeah, it's been really fun. It's been a fun little experiment. And I mean, our Twitch community is awesome. So you guys rock.
Yeah, shout out to everybody in the chat being there with your emotes and your highlights and your sometimes very aggressive mod polls.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Hilarious. Well, we do have a couple of more questions. And don't forget, if you guys want to sneak some questions in the chat, you are welcome to do this. Let's see.
I'm sorry. That's terrible.
I kind of like this question from Ricky Rich. I think it's interesting.
Okay.
So Ricky Rich writes in and says, is Ubisoft just an average publisher of average games? I understand that this question might be a bit harsh, but purely going off the Metacritic scores of many of Ubisoft's recent releases, it doesn't seem like Ubisoft is capable of or even interested in making consistently exceptional games. Huh. I started to believe this after Assassin's Creed Valhalla and Watch Dogs Legions did worse than I hoped that they would, and Immortals Fenyx Rising has solidified this belief to me. As someone who can only buy a few games a year, review scores are a helpful tool for me to decide which games to buy. So when so many of Ubisoft's recent releases seem to float between the 70 to 80 mark, I find very little reason to consider their games. Does Ubisoft just make games that appeal to the hardcore fans of their franchises, or am I being too unfair to Ubisoft? Because on the outside, their games appear to be exceptionally average.
Oh, that's an interesting question. Ooh, someone's there.
Sorry about that. It's probably a delivery.
Ooh, you know, it's interesting because Andrea has a lot more experience with Ubisoft games than I do, but I understand what Ricky Rich is saying here because besides the Far Cry games, I don't know when the last time was I finished a Ubisoft game. And to me, when I think about the Assassin's Creed franchise, I've been watching Jason play Valhalla and obviously been listening to Andrea talk about it. I'm like, God, that looks fun. It looks like there's a lot of really fun narrative moments sprinkled in there. And some of the side quests are just like wacky and crazy. And for that reason, like I'm interested to dabble in it, but I don't just see myself finishing it. And I don't think they're bad games, but it doesn't do anything exceptional that would draw me in and be like, I got to stop everything I'm playing to hop in and play this. And I feel like it's because they feel more or less, from like someone who's not super familiar with the series, they look more or less the same when you kind of like take a step back and really look at it. I know when you really deep dive into them, there's some different changes that Andrea has talked about before. But for me, as like someone who I think Ubisoft would be trying to sell, I'm like, do I want to play this or do I want to try something different? And it generally is always, I want to try something different. And yeah.
Yeah, it's an interesting question because I don't put a lot of stock in review scores because as somebody who used to do game reviews and has worked at many outlets that did game reviews, I know just how subjective they are.
Yeah.
There is nothing objective about a video game review score. And anybody who tries to tell you that their score is objective is lying to you, straight up. And that's why I don't think that you should ever base your purchase decisions off of review scores alone. Obviously, if a game is getting consistently low scores, it's something to look at. Is the game broken? Is it buggy? Is it unplayable? You know, why is this game getting very low scores? And when I say low, I mean like 60 and below, right? Like sixes, mm-hmm. fives, fours. That's low. Anything above a 7 is a good score.
And to clarify, I just want to go through the Metacritic scores because I pulled this for earlier this month.
Yeah, sure, go for it.
So AC Odyssey has an 83 on PS4, an 87 on Xbox One, and an 86 on PC. AC Origins has an 81 on PS4 and an 85 on Xbox One. I mean, those are great scores. If you're going to look at Metacritic and take that into consideration, I just wanted to throw that out there because like those are really great scores. Those aren't just like average.
Yes. Continue. And it's also important to remember, it's very rare that a reviewer is going to be able to access and play and experience an entire Ubisoft open world game in the limited period before release that they have with the embargo. A lot of times the reviewers will, of course, finish the main storyline, but what makes Ubisoft games so great, in my opinion, is the extras, right? It's like all of the side quests. It's the world building. It's the little narrative moments that you get with some of the side characters that you meet in the world. And it's just the gameplay of having a lot of stuff to do. Now, I, of course, have been a vocal critic of they need to edit down a little bit, that sometimes they go overboard and it's way too much stuff to do. But fans of Ubisoft games love that there's a ton of stuff to do in their games. And clearly, they are selling like gangbusters. Oh, yeah. If you look at the most critically acclaimed games, with a couple of key exceptions, of course, there are some key exceptions, GTA and Red Dead being among them, and some others, they do not sell as many units worldwide as games that get sevens and eights do. They just don't. Like, take God of War. One of my favorite games of all time. My game of the generation for PlayStation 4, like to me, a masterpiece of game making, did not sell nearly as many copies as a game like Call of Duty did, or Assassin's Creed Origins, or Odyssey did, right? Like, it just, they just don't, you know, like really highly critically acclaimed games tend to have a very specific point of view. And because of that, if you're not trying to appease as many gamers as possible, but you're trying to do something really unique with vision that is really excellent in a specific way, you're going to alienate a bunch of other gamers, and thus you're not going to sell as many copies. And I don't think there's anything wrong with not making a game that's going to be 10 out of 10 every time. I think making a 10 out of 10 game is also impossible to do. You can't set out from the beginning going, this is going to be a 9 or a 10 game every time. You know, it's like trying to make a viral video.
You just
that's
never
not,
fucking
that's not
know.
How that works, you know. The community decides what's going to be good and what's going to be viral. And obviously there are specific things developers can do to make their game set up for success, right? You know, polish and, you know, design elements and all of that obviously comes into play. I think every video game designer sets out to make the best game possible, but there's just so many obstacles at play in video game development that just prohibit that. I just saw a thread over the weekend from a bunch of video game writers who talked about how frustrating it is that writing and narrative is one of the first things that gets cut when they're looking at doing budget cuts or trim backs, and how like trimming parts of the gameplay elements can really adversely affect the narrative, and how being a video game writer is really difficult for that reason. You know, just things like that that, you know, make making a game that's a 9 or a 10 really challenging.
Yeah. And again, it kind of just comes back to what you're saying. Like, reviews are subjective. And what I might really love, Andrea might think is garbage, or vice versa, right? And so I know there are a lot of folks, too, and I think about Jason, for example, who always looks forward to the Assassin's Creed games. It's like one of the one game series he will play from mostly from start to finish. And he just sits down and plunks all this time into him. So if you were to ask him, he would scoff at this and be like, average, like, no, they're way above average, because that's the kind of formula that he loves and that speaks to him. And I think that's just really what it comes down to, is what floats your boat, what sharpens your pencil, what flips your switch, what blows up your skirt, what shines your light.
I was just going to see how long you could keep going.
I know, I was starting to run out of things. What turns your knob? Okay.
I'm into it, Britt.
Thanks.
I like your euphemisms. I mean, and that's, you know, there's a lot more to this discussion than, and there's a lot of exceptions. There's a lot of, I know that there's probably many people out there that are already pushing up their glasses. Well, I actually, Andrea, coming at me with your like edge case exceptions. And yes, I know that they exist. But to answer Ricky Rich's question, you know, why their games appear to be exceptionally average. And I think when you're trying to appease as many gamers as possible, to sell as many copies as possible, and also make a profit as often as possible, you know, you're going to end up with games that are exceptionally average according to review scores, when in reality, exceptionally average in your mind is not average. An 8 is not average. An 8 is a good score. Let me remind you, an 8 is a good score. An 8 is a good score. Don't forget it.
I have a hot take.
Yes, give me a hot take.
My hot take is, if you want to talk about exceptionally average, I think you have to take a step back and look at the Pokemon franchise. And I say this many times before, because the Pokemon franchise, in the beginning, I think it was new and innovative and exciting and definitely deserves its place in the video game Hall of Fame that it has. But over the years, like, I think the Pokemon games, while very fun, they're not exceptional, they're not incredible, they're not groundbreaking, and that's because they don't need to be, because they sell like fucking hotcakes. If you look at, like, Assassin's Creed, for example, these games that come out every year, sometimes every couple years, they don't need to innovate that much because they continue to sell. And I think it's that same sort of thing that you look at is, you know, Pokemon. It could be so much better, but why would they need to, like, go and push themselves? They don't need to. And because of that reason, I don't know if the Pokemon franchise will ever have, like, an incredible, exceptional, holy fucking shit game. Which makes me sad. There you go. That's my hot take.
I'm into it, Brittany. I like it. I honestly don't think it's that much of a hot take. I think you're just speaking the truth.
Yeah. Well, you know, some people would consider that a hot take, Andrea.
Yeah, that's true. I like how Rihanna in the chat here is just reminding people it's okay to just like what you like. It doesn't matter if the score is good or not. If it's your game and you like playing it and you have fun with it, why does it matter? I would say to you, Ricky, that I would encourage you to expand your horizons and your perceptions of games and not just base your purchases on review scores. I think also, if you are a gamer like you say you are that is limited in budget, you can only buy a couple of games a year, Ubisoft games are an amazing option because they add so much content to the games, and the base games themselves have usually at least 100 hours, if not more, of gameplay in them, whereas a lot of other games at the same price point do not. So I would encourage you to challenge your perspectives on what is worth your dollar, and then obviously come to your own decision about what it is and use all of the tools out there, previews, Twitch streams, what have you, to kind of evaluate a game before you make your purchase. But don't just use review scores as your compass.
No, definitely not. Don't do that. Some of my favorite games had not great review scores. I think of a game like Outward, for example. That game is a broken, buggy mess, but it has so many features about it that I personally love. The open world exploration, the co-op features. I think of a game like Kingdom Come Deliverance, which I don't think these games scored terribly, but, you know, incredibly buggy and has some things that people don't love. But I personally really loved those things. So one of my personal favorite games. So yeah, just can't just look at scores. There's a lot that goes into that score. I kind of don't like scores.
Yep. Same. That's why we don't score stuff here.
Yeah. Yeah, there's too much that goes into it.
There's a lot of people, and by people I mean outlets, that have done away with their review scores over the last couple of years and instead just give impressions, which is obviously what we do here at What's Good Games. We've never done reviews formally here, and that is by design because we think putting a number on art is really, really challenging. And which is why review scores tend to be a weird barometer for what's good and what's not, you know?
But let's be real. If we were rating my Microsoft Paint, Andrea, what would you give it?
10 out of 10, Brittany.
That's a good friend right there. That's a good friend right there.
Thank you. I mean, I remember the first time you did those live. I think it was on a Patreon stream. And I had no idea that you were so quick with Microsoft Paint.
Listen, like, that's been my bread and butter ever since I was wee lass on my very first computer. Microsoft Paint. And you know what? It ain't pretty, but it gets the job done. You just got to learn how to manipulate it a little bit. It can be your best friend if you treat it right. That Microsoft Paint.
What? I feel like that's a life lesson, like, baked in there.
Oh, probably.
Your best friend if you treat it right.
Just pull that out of my ass. But it sounded good. So there you go.
I like it. I like it a lot. There are a couple of other questions that kind of get in the weeds for some games that I'm not super knowledgeable about. So I don't know. Are any of those speaking to you, Britt?
I just have our doc up. I don't have the Dear WGG up. You know, I'm kind of slacking. I got to be honest. I'm kind of slacking.
It's, you know what? It's Monday. I don't blame you.
The holidays are right around the corner, friends. We're going to be taking a couple weeks off. Don't worry. You're going to have content. But, you know, senioritis, man.
This one is kind of funny.
Okay.
And sorry, Danny, I'm reading it, but... I know Danny was just waiting for the day that you say his name correctly.
It'll never happen.
Danny Jason writes in and says, if by some cruel act of fate or coincidence, Breath of the Wild 2 and Horizon Forbidden West come out at the same time, he writes a week apart again, because they came out a week apart the first time.
Okay.
But we didn't know about either game the first time. It was the first Breath of the Wild and it was the first Horizon. Which one will you play?
So Forbidden West or Breath of the Wild 2?
Which one will you play first? Because obviously we'll both be playing both of them. But yeah, which one first?
Here's the thing. Zelda, again, like, okay, I'm not going to go down that rabbit hole. I have said many times that I think Zelda Breath of the Wild was a fantastic game, just not a fantastic Zelda game. And I have hopes that the next Breath of the Wild will bring back some of the classic Zelda-isms that I truly love. And now some of you are probably pushing, Brittany, open world, and that's been in all the Zelda games. It's nothing new. It's nothing innovative. I understand. You think it's already classic. But I want my shrines back. Like, not my shrines. Like, my temples. I want my dungeons. I want my Skulltulas. I want my heart pieces. Like, I want all of those things back. So for that reason, I'm always going to go Zelda first, because I'm always going to hope that there's some little hints or something referencing Ocarina of Time, for example, or like something to do with the old classic formula that N64 era, don't at me. I know who you are. I know you're thinking it. Don't do it. I'm a glutton for punishment. That's all I can say. It would have to be Zelda, although I think the better experience probably would be Horizon Forbidden West. Like, from a narrative perspective, from a storytelling, from a gameplay, probably will be Forbidden West. But I can't help myself, Andrea. I can't help it.
Yes, Brittany! I'm so glad that you're a fan now.
I am. I'm so looking forward to that game. I mean, probably, honestly, more than Breath of the Wild 2. But I just have to play Breath of the Wild 2 because I have to know what they're doing with that franchise. It's like, you know, you always hope.
Yeah, it's interesting because I want to believe that Nintendo's going to do some cool things, but I really just feel like they're going to take the world they built with Breath of the Wild and just do more of the same for Zelda. And I think this is a trope that Nintendo narratively has fallen into time and time again with their franchises, is that they're not really doing anything exciting narratively. And that's such a bummer as a lifelong Nintendo fan, is that they innovate with their hardware. They innovate with some of their connectivity when it comes to family and, you know, kind of co-op gaming. I think about, you know, like how Mario Kart in and of itself is like a case study and, you know, co-op and competitive gaming. But like, I just want them to like take more risks when it comes to their games. Like, I want Breath of the Wild 2 to be a risky, but we know it's not going to.
No, it's not.
You know who is going to take the risk? Gorilla. Because they took a giant risk with the first Horizon, and I can't wait to see what they do narratively with Forbidden West, because I loved the story of Horizon Zero Dawn.
Oh, yeah. Phenomenal game. Fantastic game. It falls into the same Pokemon thing that I was saying earlier. Like, why? I mean, never mind. I can't. We don't have enough time for that.
That's a whole show on its own.
That's a whole show.
A dissection of Brit's thoughts on Pokemon. Oh, my goodness. Well, this has been fun. Thank you, everybody, who has joined us live on our episodes, who has written into Dear WGG, who has been part of the show and supported what we do here at What's Good Games. Don't worry. The regular podcast is not going anywhere, just as another reminder. And just as a pro tip, we are still doing our Black Friday sale on our merch at whatsgoodgames.com/store until December 1st, which I believe is tomorrow.
Yeah, it is.
Yes. So if you use code FRIDAY10 at our merch store, you can get 10% off of your items. And also, if you're a patron, you get 20% off. You go to patreon.com/whatsgoodgames to get that code. I've heard from people that there are several items that are sold out. So sorry about that. We do not control the inventory on Teespring, but it's clearly they've been having a lot of people buy stuff, not just our stuff, but stuff across the site. So if that happens to you, let us know and we'll try to help you out if you want to place your order a little bit later in the month once things come back in stock. But thank you to everybody who's been buying stuff. If you did end up buying something, once it arrives, we want to see a photo. Mm-hmm. Tweet to us at @whatsgood_games so we can see you in your glorious merch.
Glorious garb.
Yes. All right, and that's going to do it. Britt, it's time to say goodbye.
goodbye, farewell, adios, sayonara. I don't know how to say goodbye, ciao, in any other language.
You nailed it.
Thanks.
Bye, everybody.
Ciao.